line. My name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic and cocaine addict.
Mark.
Let's take a moment of silence, then we'll say the serenity prayer together. Thank you. Serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. I'm going to call this talk Mark Unplugged, for lack of a better word. I want to read something from a book by Anthony DeMello called Awareness. It's called, Will I Be of Help to You? Do you think I'm going to help anybody? No, 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 no. Don't expect me to be of help to anyone, nor do I expect to damage anyone. If you're damaged, you did it. If you're helped, you did it. You really did. You think people help you? They don't. You think people support you? They don't. There was a woman in a therapy group I was conducting once. She was a religious sister. She said to me, I don't feel supported by my superior. So I said, what do you mean by that? She said, well, my superior, the provincial supervisor, never shows up at the monastery where I am in charge, never. She never says a word of appreciation. I said to her, all right, let's do a little role-playing. Pretend I know your superior. In fact, pretend I know exactly what she thinks about you. So I say to you, you know, Mary, the reason I don't come to that place you're in is because it's the one place in the province that's trouble-free. No problems. I know you're in charge, so all is well. How do you feel now? She said, I feel great. Then I said to her, all right, would you mind leaving the room for a minute or two? This is part of the exercise. So she did. While she was away, I said to the others in the therapy group, I'm still a superior, okay? Mary out there is the worst director I've ever had in the whole history of the province. In fact, the reason I don't go to the monastery is because I can't bear to see what she's up to. It's simply awful. But if I tell her the truth, it's only going to make those novices suffer all the more. We're getting somebody to take her place in a year or two. We're training someone. In the meantime, I thought I would say those nice things to her to keep her going. What do you think about that? They answered, well, it was really the only thing you could do under the circumstances. Then I brought Mary back into the group, and I asked her if she still felt great. Oh, yes, she said. Poor Mary. She thought she was being supported when she wasn't. The point is that most of what we feel and think, we conjure up for ourselves in our heads, including this business of being helped by people. Do you think you help people because you're in love with them? Well, I've got news for you. You're never in love with anyone. You're only in love with your prejudiced and hopeful idea of that person. Take a minute to think about that. You are never in love with anyone. You're in love with your prejudiced idea of that person. Isn't that how you fall out of love? Your idea changes, doesn't it? How could you let me down when I trusted you so much, you say to someone. Did you really trust them? You never trusted anyone. Come off it. That's part of society's brainwashing. You never trust anyone. You only trust your judgment about that person. So what are you complaining about? The fact is, you don't like to say, my judgment was lousy, because that's not very flattering to you, is it? So you prefer to say, well, how could you have let me down? So there it is. People don't really want to grow up. People don't really want to change. People don't really want to be happy. As someone so wisely said to me, don't try to make them happy, you only get in trouble. Don't try to teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and it irritates the pig. Like the businessman that goes into a bar. He sits down, he sees his fellow with a banana in his ear. And he thinks, I wonder if I should mention that to him. No, it's none of my business. But the thought nags at him. So after having a drink or two, he says to the fellow, excuse me, you got a banana in your ear. The fellow says, what? The businessman repeats, you got a banana in your ear. Again, the fellow says, what was that? You got a banana in your ear, the businessman shouts. Talk louder, the fellow says, I got a banana in my ear. So it's useless. Give up, give up, give up, I say to myself. Say your thing and get out of here. And if they profit, that's fine. If they don't, too bad. When I said I want to talk about Mark Unplugged, I want to talk to you all about a lot of mistakes I've made along the way that hopefully none of you have to make. Wisdom is the ability to profit from others' mistakes. So I'm going to start with the most obvious one for me was my delusion about being powerless over alcohol and drugs. I took my first drink when I was 16, and looking back, by the time I was 17 years old, alcohol had already altered the direction and course of my life. Alcohol began to affect my decision-making very early on. I began to suffer consequences from alcohol by the time I was 22 years old, to the point of having to change colleges, relationships, work. I got drafted, got sent to Vietnam because of alcoholism. And my consistent and repetitive denial about that, that stemmed from a lot of things. It stemmed from my age. I know some of you are here in your 20s. You may have experienced what I'm talking about. At the root cause of all this, gentlemen, is my incapacity to learn from my experience. If your experience is you take a drink and it takes you, or you take the drugs and it takes you, it matters not what your chronological age is, what you do for a living, how much money you have in the bank, married or single. It's very simple. If alcohol or drugs is causing problems in your life, chances are very strong you're an alcoholic and a drug addict. You will never beat that game. Wake up to your experience. How many of you have been to rehab more than once? Raise your hands. Is what I'm saying resonate with you as to why you've had to go more than once? Because of your own denial and delusion about your alcoholism and drug addiction. Because once I finally got it, that I'm an alcoholic, that I'm a drug addict, that it became my master. If you look up the word master and you look up slave, that's the relationship I had with alcohol and drugs. There's other components about this lie that I was telling myself. At times I would tell myself that it really wasn't impacting my life so much in other people. And in hindsight, that's an absolute lie. If you're a real alcoholic and you're a real drug addict, you don't have relationships with people. I don't care if you're married and have children. You're not present because you serve alcohol and you serve drugs. And you telling yourself that you've been there or that you have a relationship only perpetuates your denial of your first step. If alcohol and or drugs became your master, by definition, what do you serve first and foremost always? Your master. Take a look at that. Don't wait as long as I did. I should have been in rehab when I was 21. I was 36. When I came to the rooms, I had drank up all relationships. I had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage, everything I owned fit in a duffel bag. I didn't have to worry about making a phone call on Sundays for 10 minutes. Nobody was taking them. I didn't have to worry about family visitation. I would have been easy on one of the guys' caseloads. There wasn't no one to call because nobody cared because I drank them all up. Kind of like your experience. Right? Same thing. You've drank them all up. I understand that because I talk to them all. Do you want to hear? No, we don't. We don't. See? I get that. I get what he's gone through. If you're denying what I'm just saying to you, it's a denial about what's wrong with you. See, I had to touch the truth of all of these kinds of things before I was willing to do what recovery asked me to do. Because as paradoxical as it sounds, the things that recovery asks you to do as opposed to what alcohol and drugs ask you to do is like the kiss in the baby's butt compared to when I take a drink. But if I'm in denial and delusion about my first step, then the things recovery asks me to do seems difficult, doesn't it? Going to a meeting, getting a sponsor, working the steps, getting a home group, doing the disciplines of 10 or 11, making all your amends, paying the money back, admitting when you're wrong. That seems very, very hard if you haven't had a solid first step experience. Once I had a first step experience, all of that became easy. It was easy then, and it's easy now. And by the way, I don't have an option to do it or not do it. I only have a choice to do it because of my first step. So those were some of the many delusions I had, and I strongly suspect some of you suffer from those as well. Was I had to fully concede and admit to myself that alcohol and cocaine was my master and that I served alcohol and cocaine above everything. By the way, One, the only way that I could begin to experience the truth of my life, I had to disregard the fantasy and the lies my mind told me, and I had to look at one thing to find out my truth, my actions. So this thing I just said to you about alcohol and drugs being your master, if you want to know if it's your truth, look at your actions. You follow me? Look at your actions. Did you pursue it in spite of everybody and everything? Did you pursue it to the detriment of your physical health? Did you pursue it to the detriment of your relationships with your family, with your wife, with your girlfriend, with your children? Did you pursue it when you had legal situations and you shouldn't? And if the answer is yes to all that, then I suspect that you all had the same master I had. And the sooner you wake up to that, the better off that you are, so you don't ever have to repeat this again unless you want to choose to come visit sometime to share, but not because you're a, quote, resident or a patient or a client any longer. As I told you, I needed to have gone to rehab by the time I was 21. I was 36. Here's another element of why I didn't quit drinking or doing drugs, because I begin to suffer more and more consequences, whether it's relationships, getting fired, physical health. The book talks about the effect produced by alcohol. And I really started to explore that, because I don't know if you gentlemen have ever asked yourself this question, but I'll give you an example. I've had twice I've died as a result of my alcohol and drug use. One time they had to thump me. 5 days later, I'm drinking and snorting cocaine. Why would I do that? I don't consider myself to be the sharpest kid in the block, but I'm not the dumbest either. I looked at times I would have a great job interview, but I'd take a drink the day before and I couldn't show up. And I couldn't show up for funerals and weddings and all kinds of things. So I thought to myself, in spite of all these consequences, why is it I keep drinking? And the reason, of course, it really got back to was the effect produced. Unbeknownst to me, I had tried everything that I knew of to feel comfortable in my skin. I could never get there except when I drank and when I did drugs. Those were the only two things that I ever took inside me that gave me some degree of comfort within myself. You'll understand that. So when you suggested to me that I give up alcohol or that I give up cocaine, to you it's a suggestion. What you're really saying to me is, let me give you my arm. Let me give you my heart. Now, I didn't know this then, but I know it now. You're asking me to give up the only thing that ever gave me any degree of ease and comfort. This is why our families will never understand us. Because they'll never get that. You know, if those of you that have family members or wives or that girlfriends that are non-alkies, they're going to ask you real dumb questions. Dumb because they have no experience what alcohol and drugs do to us. When it works, you know, when it's doing its deal, when it really works, and you take those first two, three big drinks, and it calms everything down. You can breathe a little deeper. World looks okay. You're a little bit okay in your skin. Or you take that big hit of cocaine, rock it back a little, same thing happens. They'll never know that. They'll never understand that. Oh, God, I can breathe. Things quieted down. The voices. Voices slowed down a little. They don't need to understand it. You better understand it. You know, what does it mean when something's your master? The reason I kept going back to it was my master. The reason I allowed alcohol and cocaine to be my master was the effect that it produced. But at some point in time, the effect it produced began to dissipate and wear off. And then the very thing that it used to do, I would drink. How many of you have this experience? You drink and drink and drink, but no effect was produced. That's when it gets horrible. Or you would snort and snort and snort, and other than your nose getting a little bloody, there's no effect produced. That's when it becomes horrible for us. That's when our own way, one reason or another, we'll begin to seek help. So I had to pay attention to that. And here's how I translate that in recovery. If, in fact, the only time Mark has ever been comfortable with his own skin is behind a drink or drugs, I've got to have that same experience in recovery, and just not drinking is not my solution. Do you get that? Just not drinking, not doing drugs has never been Mark's solution. I got to have something to produce the same effect in me that alcohol and drugs did, but I got to be sober. What was that? What was that was a spiritual program of action in God. That's what it was. The other thing, and fortunately for me, I got this very early on in recovery. It does not matter to me, any people that are in my life, whether it's the woman I'm in love with, whether it's an employer, whether it's family, it made no difference to me if they get the fact that I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, but it better make a big difference to me, and I live my life based on recovery. You go visit someone in Thanksgiving. I went to a meeting. Some people would voice comments about that. I didn't care. I went to my meeting. From the day I got sober to this day, my life is still based on my recovery, staying clean and sober. That means I've missed things along the way. I could care less. See, they're not the ones that almost died twice from drinking. I am. They're not the ones who at age 36 had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage, everything I own's in a duffel bag, every dream I had is gone, and trashed every relationship. I'm the one that lives with that. So if I'm the one that's got to live with the consequences, then my program of recovery is always coming first. There is no human, there is no job, there is nothing that will ever get in front of me in my recovery. I have quit jobs sober because it would impact recovery. I have ended relationships. I know with some of you we get to talking. And some of you have history of, say, relationships, and it could be marriages. And there's nothing that looks like it's healthy. Somewhere in here, I hope you get the idea that if it's not in your best interest to stay in a recovered state, you better move on. I don't care how you feel about that. Why? Because you're the one that's going to take the drink. You're the one that's going to do the shot of dope, not them. That's why. The big book was right when it said, Mark, you've got to put recovery above everything else. Above everything else. And I have from that day to this day, but the reason is because of my truth and my first step. It was no longer okay to me that alcohol and drugs was my master. It wasn't okay. Look where the master has sent you guys. Rehab countless times. Some of you have health problems. Some of you have legal problems. Some of you have strained relationships. This is where your master is sending you. And I reached a place where that was no longer all right with me. There wasn't anything about that that was okay. I wanted to do something with my life. I had some great dreams. I had some goals. I needed to serve a different master. Big book in rooms of AA, they called it God. I didn't care what they called it. I needed to find a different master. They told me if I'd work the steps, I could have an experience. That was fine with me. I put aside what I think I know about the God issue. So somewhere in here, if you ever expect to have long-term sobriety, you're probably going to have to take the position I just described. And the rest of them need to get over themselves. Does that make sense? They need to get over themselves. Make your decisions based on recovery. The last divorce I had, the reason is because at that time I was still dealing with a lot of, for lack of a better word, codependent work. Codependent work, another way to say this is this way. As long as you're getting your sense of who you are out here, you're in trouble. That's what codependency is. I can't make that any simpler. And if you're a man, the way that really shows up is with a woman, where you're getting your sense of self out here. By the time I did enough work to have power and start to get my sense of self in here, I was able to see clearly that if I stayed in that marriage, I was probably going to wind up drunk or doing something else that I'd have regrets about. And when I saw that, I was out of it just like that. However, that takes me into another area that I want to talk about. I've been sober a little over 26 years, and this is the truth. They got a whole section there, an inventory and a sex inventory, right? Starts out now about sex. How many times since you guys been here have you gone to a meeting that's been on that topic? It's never talked about. Never. Two biggest areas, quote, that are relapse are about money and sex. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this. I have experience with this. I've been married and divorced 4 times, engaged 6 times. I know what it's like to feel that who you are is based on some woman out here. Almost killed me. Almost killed me before I got in the rooms and almost killed me in the rooms. What was the work I did to get free of that? Somewhere along the line, I woke up to this idea that I was getting my sense of who I was out here. You know, when you guys sit down in the morning, you do concerns. Do you guys understand one of the reasons at times you can't really bring it to someone else is you're concerned about what they think about what you're going to say? Haven't you all gone through that one way or the other? I don't have that anymore. I'm completely devoid of that. I'm completely free of that. It doesn't exist for me. It makes no difference to me what any of you think about me. You know what makes a difference to me? What I think about you. See, if I care about what you think about me, then I lose my authenticity. Then I become fake. Then I become a stage character. And if that happens, I get diseased, and the way that I treat that is I take a drink. So I begin to wake up to this idea several years ago that I'm getting my sense of who I am out here. But what slowly happened is when I begin to get my sense of self out here, and if the job ends or if she leaves, I feel like I'm going through a death. And I knew that I couldn't stay sober if I didn't get free of that. So I started to explore, what is that about? Why do I get so heavily defined by my job or by a relationship or about the amount of money I have in the bank or the kind of car I drive or my body? What is that all about? Well, I realized what it was all about. It was all about trying to impress you all. But you don't live in here. See, I got to live in here, and I had to get free of that. A lot of spiritual books address this. The big book addresses it. Other books, Eckhart Tolle, says the objective in life is to die before you die. What did he mean? Die the false sense of self, this sense that you get out here by all these defined roles. So I began to do a lot of work with inventories. And I started to wake up. One of my epiphanies in this waking up was, do any of you have both your parents passed away? Okay, both your parents are dead. Okay. Does the son still exist?
Yes.
No. What does the son have to be to exist?
You mean the son?
S-O-N. You were the son of your parents when they were alive. Your role was the son. You got a sense of self being the son, correct? When they died, did the son still exist, that role?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it didn't. Because in order for a son to exist, your parents must be alive. My father drank himself to death in 85. My mother died in 2000. The son no longer existed. The son can't exist without parents. Yet I existed. And a bell went off and I got it. I got it. I said, all right, all these roles that I think define me, that I want to protect, that's not who I am. Who am I? That became the journey. Who am I? How many of you spent time in the chi machines? Any of you not done the chi machines? You need to do the chi machine. You'll find out who you really are. Who you really are. Those of you who've done the chi machine, I don't know if you do this when you do it, because I did it this morning, I did it yesterday. But when I'm done on the chi machine, I lay there for about 30 seconds. Those of you who've done it, you notice that tingling you feel? Well, that's your spirit. That's your chi, your life force, your energy. Bible calls it your Holy Spirit. Eckhart Tolle calls it your beingness. That's the part of you that's connected to God. That's who you really are. You take that into this body. Last time you went to a funeral, an open casket funeral, did it ever occur to you the person in the casket wasn't there? What was missing? What was missing was your chi, your life force, your spirit. That's who I really am. And I started to wake up to that. When I started to wake up to that, I got my sense of self from the inside out, not the outside in. And that external world that I used to drink and do drugs over and determine how I acted and behaved and my belief systems and thought patterns dropped away. And I begin to be authentic, and my insides and my outsides matched. And I begin to make decisions in my highest good about every area of my life, from my career, to who is in my life, to where I live, to what I do, to what was acceptable, to what was not acceptable. I no longer danced to anyone else's tune, I danced to my tune. Didn't care what they thought about it. Some of you, you'll face that, well, yeah. Parents want you to do this. They want you to do that. And what do you want to do? Touch who that is. What do you want to do? See? You want to be a cook? You want to be a chef? You want to be an intern? What do you want to do? What resonates in you? Live for that. Not for someone else. But the area of women in particular. Let's go back to that. Very important in recovery. Get your sense of self here. Don't get it out there. Watch a bunch of men come up here obsessed about a relationship. Massive red flag. If any of you got that going on, and it makes a difference to me whether it's a wife, girlfriend, that is a huge red flag for you to look at. The only consistent thing in my life is God. The rest of it is impermanent. The time you guys are here, look how many guys come and go. You and I live in a world of impermanence, but my ego, my mind, needs permanence to be safe and okay. The only consistent thing in my life that never leaves me, that is always there, is conscious contact with God as I experience God. Because I don't understand God, but I experience God. The rest of it is impermanent. Parents are impermanent. Staying young is impermanent. Staying in great health is impermanent. Relationships are impermanent. And if you have this idea you need this to be okay, then you attach permanency to it, and so you walk around in fear all the time. What if she leaves? Well, how many of you have relationships right now? Raise your hands. Okay? Let me ask this question of every one of you. Before you ever met her, did you get along just fine?
Yes.
Do you think you'd get along just fine if she was gone?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh no, she's the one. Really? She wasn't for 22 years. Too simple. You follow? Everything's on loan. It comes in and out of your lives. Your parents are on loan. Animals are on loan. Your health's on loan. It's all on loan. See, and when you understand that, then you also don't take things for granted. Like that great meal we had yesterday. Wow. See? Drink of water. Breathing. Work out in the gym. All kinds of stuff. You don't take it for granted. As you continue in your journey of sobriety, whatever work God leads you to do, do it. If you get thrust into therapy, go into it. Both feet, wide open. Bring it on. Do everything you can to wake up so you can truly be there for yourself, for your life. Particularly, I see this happen with men. This is my experience. Till I know who I really am and the path I'm going down, I have no business trying to have some woman walk alongside me. But once you know that, you can have someone walk alongside you. Otherwise, my experience is I'm either going to be behind the woman or in front of the woman. And that don't work. Find that out. Get to know yourself. Get intimate with yourself. What do you like to do? What speaks to you? God has only made one of you. Every single one of you, how special you are, is that there's only been one of you ever. What did you come here to do? Start asking yourself these questions. Start asking them now, not later. This is my own opinion. I've never read this anywhere, but I suspect there could very well be such a thing as reincarnation. I don't know this. Some evidence points to it. Let's assume perhaps there is. I don't think I was a very good person in my last reincarnation. And I think probably prior to this one, I might have went to God and said something like this. I really want to be a better man, better spirit. I want to evolve spiritually. Do you have, in my next one, do you have some kind of a deal you and I can work out where that can happen? God said, absolutely. I'm going to make you an alcoholic and a drug addict. And it's going to potentially either kill you or you're going to have to seek me with the desperation of a drowning man and grow spiritually. How's that sound? And I think I went, sign me up. Of course, I'm born and I have no recall of that deal I made, right? 1982 is when I think I finally started to remember that deal. I said, okay, that alcohol and drugs is not doing it anymore. Big book says, die the alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. I tried to die the alcoholic death. Now it's time to live on a spiritual basis. And I've been doing that since that date. And I've come to know God and know that my permanency rests in that, not out here. So I don't give out here power. I don't care if it's the job, I don't care if it's the woman, because the more you give out here, the less you have in here. Does that make sense? The less I have in here, the easier it is to get diseased. Then you get real caught up in everything from, is she going to stay or go? Am I going to have the job or not have the job? Blah, blah, blah. All of that stuff at some point then can impede and or threaten your recovery. In 95, when I got divorced for the last time, I made a commitment. I'm going to get to know myself free of being identified with a woman. And I've stayed single to this day. The woman in my life can add to my life. She can't take anything away. Do you get what I just said? Think about what I just said. Marcia can add to my life. She can take nothing away. Her absence takes nothing away. If she decided to leave, she would take nothing away. She can only add to. Do you know how freeing that is? We've never had a crossword in 4 years. That's why. See, I can also only add to her life. I can't take anything away. She also gets that everything's on loan. Relationships are not meant to be difficult. They're difficult if you haven't done your work. If you don't get your sense of self in here, your career becomes difficult if you don't get your sense of self in here because you think it defines you. What's another mistake I made? If you don't know anything about financial sanity, learn. Learn quickly. Don't wait till you're older to wake up to what financial sanity looks like. Till I became financially sane, I did not realize I spent most of my life in financial fear and that fear was an evil thread, just like the big book said, corroding everything and everybody in my life. Make a note of that. Start getting financially sane sooner rather than later. A lot of men relapse in this area. How does it show up in sobriety? Spending way more than what you're making. And then you spend a lot more than what you're making. And then what you want to do is because the company doesn't give you some big raise and you want to make it about the company. So you quit. Go on to the next one. It shows up everywhere. The sense of self out here, buying cars and clothes and houses and that I can ill afford, but I sure look good in my $900 payment, my polo, and nothing wrong with a great car, nothing wrong with dressing great. Make sure you own it, it don't own you. You follow me? See, I get in the Yukon, I get in the Mercedes, I own them. They don't own me. They don't define me. They're just nice to drive. That's why I have them. There's no other reason. Oh, there was a time that I would have had to have the Mercedes because I thought so poorly of myself. And you might think better of me because I've got my sense of self out here, right? See? Here's something else. Let go of your story and how it used to be. I used to weigh 185. Don't think I'm going there again. Probably won't happen. Nice story to tell. Used to bench press 295. 62 now. Bench press 205. Nice story to tell. It's not where I live. What's my current reality? There is no other reality. What's your current reality? Let go of the story. Why? Because you stay identified with it. Well, I was this, and I was that. It has no reality. What's your current reality? Make your decisions based on that. Stay rooted in that. Depression. How many of you have suffered from depression? Raise your hands. Okay. Most men I know with relapse history have dealt with depression. Not paying attention to this almost led to me committing suicide between my 9th and 10th year and affected every area of my life, decision making, everything. If you have experience with depression, if that is a symptom for you, you are responsible for taking care of that. Take care of that. Don't do what I did. See, I think I lived in a depressed state so long. First of all, I drank and did drugs to treat my depression. Because I was a daily drinker and drug user. Wasn't a binger, a daily. And in looking back, the effect produced, it treated my depression. You follow me? Now, here is the problem when they told me I was depressed and early on in recovery. If you've been depressed your whole life, then not being depressed, you don't have any experience with, do you? So they'd say, well, you got a lot of depression stuff going on. Now I'm sober. I go, no, I don't. Denial, complete denial of it, right? So about every 5 years, that the pain and the pressure behind that would get so intense, I would quit jobs, I would end relationships and trash everything and then start my life over again sober. And then finally, between my 9th and 10th year, I almost off myself. I was having so much fun being sober. If that's an area of your life, assume responsibility for it. What do? Work out, nutrition, water, rest, meditation. In my case, organic supplements, because I don't do well with synthetics. I have adverse side effects. Haven't had to take anything the last 6 years. But it's a key piece also in my recovery. I cannot deny that I don't have it. If it's something you've had to deal with it on whatever methodology you need to. But don't pretend it's not there. You'll drink and do drugs to treat it. So you're responsible for your life. Nobody else. Not your parents. Nobody. Remember, he says this. You're the one that better assume complete responsibility for your life. Because no one can do it for you. Gentlemen, we came in alone. We're going out alone. That's okay. You stay rooted and grounded in God, and from your dash, from your birth date to your death date, the dash, what do you want to do with your dash? God will send you all kinds of things in your story. You know, the dash, which symbolizes your life. Enjoy them for the length of time they're with you. Make something of your dash. Only you can do that. Nobody can do that for you. Can they assist and support to some degree? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's only you. One of the greatest statements of hope for me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is all Mark's troubles are my own making, and they are. That means my solution is also of my own making, and it is. What a wonderful thing. See? Want to change the financial situation in my life? I devise a plan, work the steps, and I watch it change. It's fabulous because I take complete responsibility for my life. The word blame is gone. It's not about them. It's not about how I was raised. It's not about my dad died of alcoholism. It's not about I'm a Vietnam vet. blah, 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 blah. You know, that story, right? I'm so far past the story into my current reality. Talk about something else. You're all given a booklet called Shamefaced. Get in it. I was 20 years sober. Here's what happened. Some of you can relate. How many of you have absentee fathers? Either separation, divorce, or dad works a lot and he's gone. I think some of you had that problem. Okay? Well, I had a lot of that. And at the end of the day, I'm 20 years sober. I just done a workshop in Memphis, Tennessee with 300 people. Me and a pal of mine, Joe Hawk. And I'm still sitting there and I'm doing this workshop and I got tapes and CDs all over and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting up there and the voice, I'm having this voice go on. Voice, you know, the voice that says, if they find out who you really are, they'd never ask you back. Right? 20 years sober. You're a fake. You're a chameleon. You're all those voices going on all weekend long while I'm doing this. That did not seem right to me, and it wasn't okay to me. So through a series of events, I get to a therapist, an older woman. We're talking about this, and right out of the chute, she stops me and she said, shame. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, based on everything you're telling me, you have a shame in you that says you don't deserve to be on the planet. And everywhere you go, in spite of your successes, in spite of any of that, that voice has always been going on, hasn't you? And some lights started going off. And I said, yes. Doesn't matter how much money's in the bank, doesn't matter anything. That voice won't leave me. What is that voice? She said, well, you somehow got the message you don't deserve to be on the planet. The word I'll use for it, she said, is called shame. She said, look at it. So I started looking at a lot of different books, and I saw that actually what I saw now is probably shame. I used to call fear and anger, etc., etc. It wasn't. It was shame for being here, for occupying my space that God intended me to occupy. And that little booklet you get actually was the one that sprung me free from it. And when I got that little booklet, when I got to the other side and did some of the assignments and took a look at it, I was free. And that day, a very fascinating thing happened for me. First time in my life, I remembered my insides and outsides were a perfect match, and there was nothing blocking me anymore. A perfect match from the inside to the out. And I really, that day, walked as a free man. I no longer found it necessary to be self-destructive, to build up and tear down. How many of you have that history? All of you have that history. Build up and tear down. Shame is a driving force beyond that. If you have a voice in your head that's saying you don't deserve, here's how it shows up sober. You get a good job, you get in a relationship, you're going along, and then you destroy it. Or you quit college just ahead of time. And that's all that voice that says you don't deserve any of this. And you're completely asleep and unconscious to it. And you, the next thing you know, you wake up and you say, how did I get here? That I was doing that every 5 years. I would build up and tear down, build up and tear down. I finally identified that, and I wrote out a new set of belief systems. The Four Agreements talks about that. If you guys want to know what your belief systems are, look at the things you've been doing or not doing, and they'll show you what you believe. That's when I began to work with goal setting, with the I Am statements. And I started all this really, gentlemen, about 10 years ago. My life took off like a rocket. From that day to this day, there was a bunch of work I did so that my insides and outside could match. And then I began to work with the spiritual laws of manifestation. That's how all this happened. It started in 1997, little words on a paper, that I'm going to open a recovery center. And then in 2006, the physical manifestation of that took place. But none of that could take place till I'd done the work necessary so the insides and outsides match. That's some stuff I would hope you'd all pay attention to. None of you ever have to drink and do drugs again if you don't want to, if you're willing to do the things necessary to stay clean and sober. But that rests on your shoulders. And quite frankly, it's very much tied into this first step. Do not lie to yourself about your first step. Look at your experience, not what your head says. Am I a real alcoholic? Am I a real drug addict? Was I a slave to alcohol and drugs? Look up the word master and slave. Don't lie to yourself about these great relationships you had or have had. They aren't great. When you're a slave to something, that's the only relationship you have. The rest of them are ancillary and fill-ins, right? We can turn all that around with the process of recovery, and we can make amends. And I have great relationships with a lot of people today. Don't take us long to do some of this stuff. You know, I've had to do this over 26 years. I'm throwing it out to you guys now. This program basically was set up to do what? The disciplines of 10 or 11. Stick with them till you die. Stay immersed in the program. Get that home group. If you have any secondary disorders, work on them. You're responsible for them. Don't stick your head in the sand and pretend they don't exist. They do. Assume responsibility for your sobriety and for your life. Work on being authentic. Work on getting your sense of self from the inside out, not the outside in. Pay attention to that. There's always signs when you're getting your sense of self out here. Let your decision-making be recovery-based. Does not mean it's always comfortable. Does not always mean it's good. Let it be recovery-based. Let it be for you. Ask God to show you where your career path is meant to be. Because that voice is whispering to you. What should I do? Some of you are a little older than the others. You know, Jack, best the big book's promised you is the best years of your life lie ahead of you. The best years of my life lie ahead of me. You can't be too old to get this, and you can't be too young. If you're sitting here and you're younger than some of the rest of us, it's because you're supposed to be. See, you don't know. Maybe you're only meant to live another 2 years and then die sober. You don't know any of this. But if your experience with alcohol and drugs has brought you here, wake up to it. Wake up to it. Wake up to the path you're being led down. Trust that God always has you in His care. Make decisions based on recovery. Be willing to listen to others. Surrender to a way other than your own. Understand that in your first year or two, your capacity to make decisions for your highest good is very limited because of who you've been serving. You've been serving a different master. You follow me? Your thought processes, your decision making is around serving that master. Right? Not a kind, loving, powerful, compassionate God, but a different master. Learn that. Begin to trust in that. Ask for more help. You know, one of the things about steel on steel is you throw out an idea. When three or four people's eyes get real big, you, at that time, you ought to know that your idea is probably not a good one. Right? If you're going to come up with your plan, run it by a couple people. Be willing to listen to their feedback. Right? Get open-minded, particularly in the first 2 years. Make your decisions around your recovery. That recovery must come above everything. And again, understand this, it's only important you know that. Your family doesn't need to know that. Those of you that are estranged from your families, I can tell you from my own experience, all that stuff gets healed. They want nothing but for you to be clean and sober, and that's your responsibility. It's not theirs. Probably one last thing, you know, in the time that you're here, when you do your phone calls, when they come down and see you, ask about them. Ask how they're doing. How are you, Mom? How are you, Dad? How are you, wife? You know, how are you doing? You know, glad you support me in being here. I made some decisions to grow up. Don't be offended when they say it's about time. You know, that'll happen too. But embrace life sober. It's fabulous. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And that's all I got. Thank you, gentlemen.